Well, that was like magic. There was few people here, now it's a room full of people here. Okay, so I thought the piece of paper that was circulated says something, but I wanted to do something else. So I want to conclude with the verse that we were reading from this morning and completing that. One reason is it's very easy to chant this verse responsively. And another reason, it seems to be like a nice summation or conclusion of the topics that we've been discussing.
Is there a radio that decided
to come from there? It may be just somebody getting back at us for the kirtan, I don't know. Okay, are we ready? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vasudeva Praveda.
Vasudeva Praveda.
Vasudeva Paramakaha.
Vasudeva Paramakaha.
Vasudeva Parayoga.
Vasudeva Parayoga.
Vasudeva Parakriyaha.
Vasudeva
Param Jnanam. Vasudeva Param Tapaha.
Vasudeva
Paro Dharma.
Vasudeva Paro Dharma.
Vasudeva Paragatihi. In the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please Him. Yoga is for realizing Him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by Him only. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know Him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto Him. He is the supreme goal of life. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. That Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, is the only object of worship is confirmed in these two shlokas. In the Vedic literature, there is the same objective, establishing one's relationship and ultimately reviving our lost loving service unto Him. That is the sum and substance of the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, the same theory is confirmed by the Lord in His own words. What is that? The ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to know Him only. All the revealed scriptures are prepared by the Lord through His incarnation in the body of Srila Vyasadeva, just to remind the fallen souls conditioned by material nature that of Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. No demigod can award freedom from material bondage. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. Impersonalists who have no information of the Personality of Godhead minimize the omnipotence of the Supreme Lord and put Him on an equal footing with all other living beings. And for this act, such impersonalists get freedom from material bondage only with great difficulty. They can surrender unto Him only after many, many births in the culture of transcendental knowledge. So then Prabhupada goes through that's the Vasudeva Paraveda, and then each of the other ones, Parav Maka, Para Yoga, Para Kriya, Param Gyanam, he goes through each one. This word, Maka, it means sacrifice, but it specifically means or refers to the Karmakanda form of sacrifice. The yajna is performed where achieving some worldly or higher worldly, heavenly objective is the purpose behind that sacrifice. Karmakanda sacrifice, Maka. The ultimate, whether it's known or not, that's the ultimate purpose. We discussed that in our morning class. The indirect means of the worship of various devas is to see that this is the pravritti marg path. Persons get the thing that they want by submission to the Vedic process, and so while achieving their desires, gradually they're being elevated through the modes of nature towards the mode of goodness. Just by accepting that religious process, their modes of nature become elevated. And what's the purpose behind the elevation of those modes of nature? In the mode of goodness, to be able to then see the value of worshipping in the mode of goodness. Not just passion for achieving something, or ignorance for destroying something, but goodness for the ultimate purpose of transcending material existence. So, one may argue that the Vedic activities are based on sacrificial ceremonies. This is true. I'll just give a little anecdote about this. There's one devotee in Connecticut so many years ago, trying to recall his name. An American devotee who initiated a disciple of Satsarup Maharaj, and he lived near Bridgeport University. So he, low householder, he made a contact with the religion department and asked if they would be interested in having a presentation on Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness. So the department contacted the appropriate professor, and he was very happy to have someone come and speak. Hint, hint. Householders can do this too. That's the subtext. And so he went to the university, and it was an evening class, religion class, and he wrote the Hare Krishna mantra on the board. And there was somebody sitting in the class, seemingly in a grumpy mood, and he thought, uh-oh. When the man came up afterwards, after the class, he didn't like disturb the class, but after the class he came up and took the eraser out and corrected the diacritics in the Sanskrit for the Hare Krishna mantra. So he thought, uh-oh, twice. And said, oh, you know Sanskrit? He said, yes. It's like, he was in a grumpy mood for sure. And so, what did you think of the class? This presentation on Bhagavad Gita. And he said, you've misled the people. I said, really? Can you explain what do you mean by that? He said, the purpose of the Vedas is yajna. So this devotee replied, well, of course, Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita that along with generations of men and demigods, he sent forth this sacrifice by which one can please the personality of Godhead. So when you say the purpose of the Vedas is yajna, can you say yajna unto whom? And the man's reply was, not unto whom. Yajna. So, you know, it's challenging spirit. What's happening? Okay. Because Todd, remember him? He was in the Bhakti program for a while in Brooklyn Temple. Yeah, Todd. Anyway, the music's over. That's good. Yeah, there it is? Okay, a little fresh air. A little music. I don't hear it. Yes, okay. In our temple in Trinidad, you've been there. The temple in Trinidad, every time we have a kirtan, there's a person that lives across the street. And they have a amplification system and they play loud music. Just like to, you know, get back at the devotees.
Just what that devotee used to live in New York, next to the temple.
Really?
Yes,
it's a devotee. He used to be a devotee. Oh, a man that used to live. So whenever they have kirtan, at any time of the day, he's got his amplification system. He plays loud music to drown out the sound of the kirtan, so he doesn't have to hear the kirtan. Maybe that's what happened here. Anyway. So, Todd, I forget his initiated name, had said in the class what is said here in the Bhagavatam. Vasudeva para makaha. The purpose behind the sacrifice is to please the personality of Godhead. Sacrifice unto whom? Yajnavai Vishnu. The purpose of yajna, another name of Vishnu is yajna, but bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suradam sarvabhutanam kyatamam shantim ritchiti. In the process of sacrifice, at the very, very beginning of even the karmakanda sacrifices, it's part of the procedure that you chant the mantra for the bhokta of the yajna, the enjoyer of the sacrifice, or the predominating deity of the sacrifice. And that mantra very often is the same mantra that we recite before reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This deva, that deva, Ganesh, please remove all obstacles, svaha. But there's a bhokta of the yajna. And so they're reciting, even in karmakanda rituals, they're reciting the name of Lord Vishnu. Or Vasudev. Or Narayan. Or one of the forms of the personality of Godhead. So, he's the ultimate beneficiary. He's the ultimate purpose behind the yajna. So what's being indicated here is that there are classes of followers of the Vedas that are pantheistic or impersonal. The pantheist is many gods, this one, that one, depending upon what you want. And then the impersonalist is not unto whom, but sacrifice. Because there's verses in Bhagavad Gita that indicate that within the act of sacrifice, the all-pervasive transcendence is situated. But that all-pervasive transcendence, which is situated in the act of sacrifice, which is true, Krishna is the pratishtha, the basis or support. Something like on a material plane, this cup is being supported by the table, and the table is being supported by the legs of the table, and the legs of the table are being supported by the floor, and the floor is being supported by some beams under the floor, and that's being supported by the foundation, and that's being supported by the earth, and that's being supported by Lord Ananta. So the pratishtha term doesn't just mean physical support or place of rest. It means the existential support. The very existence of Brahman, the support for that existence is Krishna. The rays of the Brahma Jyoti are emanating from the body of Krishna. You don't have rays without the source of those rays. The basis or support of Brahman is Parabrahman. And although so many emanations may be coming from Brahman, there are Vedic aphorisms that describe like that, which is fine, and Krishna is the basis of Brahman. So, Vasudeva Paramaka. All such sacrifices are meant for realizing the truth about Vasudeva. Another name of Vasudeva is Yajna, or sacrifice. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that all sacrifices and activities are to be conducted for the satisfaction of Yajna, or Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. This is also the case with the yoga systems. So now we're already on the third line. Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Maka, Vasudeva para Yoga. Yoga means to get in touch with the Supreme Lord. The process, however, includes several bodily features such as asana, dhyana, pranayama, and meditation. And all of them are meant for concentrating upon the localized aspect of Vasudeva, represented as Paramatma. Paramatma realization is but partial realization of Vasudeva. Maybe we could open that door too. Increase the air. But, by ill luck, most yogis are stranded by the powers of mysticism achieved through the bodily process. In other words, as far as they get is some mystic cities, but realizing the source of those mystic cities, they don't get that far. So what's the fate of the unsuccessful yogi? They're given a chance in the next birth by being placed in the families of good learned brahmanas or in the families of rich merchants in order to execute the unfinished task of Vasudeva realization. If such fortunate brahmanas and sons of rich men properly utilize the chance, they can easily realize Vasudeva by good association with saintly persons. Unfortunately, such preferred persons are captivated again by material wealth and honor, and thus they practically forget the aim of life. And then the fourth one, Vasudeva para Veda. Oh, excuse me, that's the first one. Vasudeva para Kriya. According to Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 items in culturing knowledge, Well, this Vasudeva Param Jnanam. By such culture of knowledge, one becomes gradually prideless, devoid of vanity, non-violent, forbearing, simple, devoted to the great spiritual master, and self-controlled. By the culture of knowledge, one becomes unattached to hearth and home and becomes conscious of the miseries due to birth, death, old age, and disease. And all culture of knowledge culminates in devotional service to the Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. What is that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Huh? Bahunam? All right. All processes of knowledge culminate in surrendering to Krishna, Vasudev. Bahunam Jamanam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyante. Prapadyate. This is the process of surrender. He's the surrendering unto Vasudeva is the culmination of knowledge. Culture of knowledge leading one to the transcendental plane of meeting Vasudeva is real knowledge. Physical knowledge in its various branches is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as ajnana, or the opposition of real knowledge, just like in Ishopanishad. There is the culture of vidya and the culture of avidya, culture of jnana and the culture of ajnana. So we have this prayer, Om Ajnana Timirandasya Yananjana Sadakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we offer our respects unto the spiritual master who forces open our eyes which were shut in the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. So this is one of the symptoms of knowledge, is respect for that torch-bearing or knowledge-giving source, the vibrator of that transcendental message, spiritual master. So prolonging the miserable life of material existence is nescience. But the same physical knowledge leading to the way of spiritual understanding helps one to end the miserable life of physical existence and to begin the life of spiritual existence on the plane of Vasudeva. So, understanding the relationship of matter with spirit and engaging that which has come from Krishna, this material energy has come from Krishna, engaging that material energy in service to Krishna, it spiritualizes the whole process. And this is one of the dilemmas of having taken birth in the material world, is we happen to have a material body. Taking birth in the material world means we have one of these things. And we have to do something with this thing. And the something that we do with this thing is going to be with the material energy, using the material body with the material energy, and it looks like a big problem. Because as soon as you do something, then there's reactions to that something. There's bondage to karma. And so one needs this process of sacrifice or rendering sacred that which is ordinary or separated energy and making it once again connected to the Supreme. That's the process of sacrifice. So when that process of sacrifice is complete, it means taking our activities and dedicating them in service to the Supreme. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, dadasi, yad. Who knows that one? Very good. Our Shloka Raj in the back of the room. Madarpanam. Arpanam means worship. So when one's this idea, work is worship, this is some idea like that in Bhagavad Gita. It's not the work itself is worship. It's the consciousness behind the act of offering unto the Supreme, by of rendering sacred by act of sacrifice unto the Supreme. It's the act of sacrifice that is situated in transcendence, not the work itself is transcendence. Work is worship for the mudha. And acts of sacrifice is worship for the devotee. The same applies to all kinds of austerities. Tapasya, Vasudeva Param Tapaha. Tapasya means voluntarily accepting some bodily inconvenience to achieve some higher end of life. Who are some persons who underwent some voluntary suffering in order to achieve something higher? But they weren't for satisfying Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, on his tiptoes, raising his arms in the air. So that's a nice yoga asana. And try to stand there for 1,000 years. Try to stand there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, an hour, 1 day, 1 year. What to speak of the toes? I'm hungry. Where's some prasadam? No prasadam, just breathing. 1,000 years. Or Ravana. He also underwent severe bodily torture to achieve some end of sense gratification. He doesn't mention names. But certain politicians also undergo severe types of austerities to achieve some political end. No names mentioned. This is not actually tapasya. One should accept voluntary bodily inconvenience for the sake of knowing Vasudeva, because that is the way of real austerities. Otherwise, all forms of austerities are classified as modes of passion or ignorance. In other words, forms of austerities that are not found within scripture, but they have some material purposeful end, that's passion. Accepting something for the sake of getting something, achieving a fruitive result. That's born of the mode of passion. And born of the mode of ignorance is for the sake of bringing about destruction. So Hiranyakashipu and Ravana are such examples. So that's not what real austerity, real tapasya is. Wow, this is great. How do you go? Very nice. With the prasadam prepared here or at the temple?
Here.
You can smell it, huh? Wow. Hare Krishna. Passion and ignorance cannot end the miseries of life. Only the mode of goodness can mitigate the threefold miseries of life. Vasudeva and Devaki, the so-called father and mother of Lord Krishna, underwent penances to get Vasudeva as their son. Lord Sri Krishna is the father of all living beings. 14.4 Bhagavad Gita. Aham Bija Patak Pita. Therefore, he is the original living being, and of all other living beings, he is the original eternal enjoyer amongst all enjoyers. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vidadati Kama. Prabhupada doesn't give, he's just paraphrasing. Therefore, no one can be his begetting father, as the ignorant may think. His, with a capital H. No one can be his, Krishna's begetting father. Krishna has no father. He's the father of all fathers. And he has no father. Although he appears as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Lord Krishna agreed to become the son of Vasudeva and Devaki upon being pleased with their severe austerities. Therefore, if any austerities have to be done, they must be done to achieve this end of knowledge. Vasudeva. So we have two more remaining. Vasudeva param tapaha. Then Vasudeva paro dharmo. That's the subject of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Paradharma. Because it's scripture, it's presenting Dharma, but because it's Srimad Bhagavatam, it's presenting Paradharma. And what is the object of Paradharma? It's Vasudeva, Krishna. Vasudeva is the original personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna, as explained before, the original personality of Godhead, expands himself by innumerable forms. Such expansion of forms is made possible by his various energies. His energies are also multifarious, and his internal energies are superior, and external energies inferior in quality. They are explained in Bhagavad Gita 7.4 through 6 as the para and apara prakritis. So, his expansions of various forms which take place via the internal energies are superior forms, whereas the expansions which take place via the external energy are inferior forms. It's very laid out, very logically, scientifically, very clearly. So, the continued idea from the previous verses discussion is it's not that one can yatamatatopat, any form you worship, it's okay. Worship this form, worship that form. It doesn't The result is different because the object of worship is different. Prabhupada's simple counter to that idea is you go to a transportation terminal, a bus, train, or airport station, and say you want to buy a ticket to Los Angeles. Are you going to end up in New York? Yatamatatupat. They told me, yatamatatupat. Or get in your car and start driving to go back to the temple. And go in any direction, you'll get there. Or go to your home. Any direction. Take any road. Any path. It all leads to the same place. That's not a fact. Any path leads to the same place. And same, so this is one of the subjects of this section of the Bhagavatam, that different objects of worship lead to different results, different places. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitrin vrataha. Bhutan yanti bhuteja. It's not the same. Going to the realm of the devas is not bhutaloka. And bhutaloka is not pitraloka. And pitraloka is not krishnaloka. Although they're all worship, it's not the same result. And it's not the same object. So the forms of Vishnu are of the para prakriti. And that worship is of para prakriti. And the worship of other forms, the multifarious forms, that's of the apara prakriti, the external energy, or the persons who are so embodied are in the tatashta position, the marginal position. So it leads to a different result, is the idea. Therefore, all culture of knowledge, austerity, sacrifice, and activity should be aimed at changing the quality of the influence that is acting upon us. Meaning, are we going to be situated in the external or the internal energy? And so it's a religious notion to engage in worship, but if that worship is not of Lord Vishnu, you're still in the external energy. You haven't changed the influence categorically. You may have changed the channel, but you're still in the field of the material energy. From the mode of goodness channel, or to the mode of goodness channel, from the passion ignorance channel. But that's not what the purpose of the Vedas is. The Vedas deal mainly, Krishna indicates in the second chapter, the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. But nishtraigunya bhavarjana. His instruction is very clear. Go above the three gunas, nishtraigunya bhava. Become situated above all three of the modes of nature. There's only one form of worship that can accomplish that. So that form of whatever worship one does needs to be properly guided. One may have good intention, but one may have bad information. And trying to get to the program, you stop and say, which way to such and such street? And this person says this way, and that person says that way, and that person says that way. Yes, you need the right information to get to the destination. We must endeavor to cultivate spiritual energy. In the Bhagavad Gita is said that those who are mahatmas, or those whose minds have been so broadened as to engage in the service of Lord Krishna, are under the influence of the internal potency. And the effect is that such broad-minded living beings are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord without deviation. That should be the aim of life. And that is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. One should not bother himself with fruitive activities or dry speculation about transcendental knowledge. What is that verse from Nectar of Instruction or Nectar of Devotion? The core verse of Nectar of Devotion? Huh? Anyavilashita shunyam. Jnana karma jnavritam anukoyena krishnanu shilana bhaktir uttama. Here's the application. The jnana and karma features the allurements of advancing in speculative knowledge or the allurements of advancing in fruitive activities, jnana and karma, anavritam. Anya avilash shunyam. One should have no other desires. Which other desires? These two, specifically. Speculative knowledge and fruitive activity. Even the pious kind, you know, the ritualistic kind of fruitive activity. Once Prabhupada was asked, described this many times, but Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada's reply was, less than a moment. How do you go? And in that less than one moment, just two things. One must become free from all speculative knowledge and attraction for fruitive activity. And then he paused and said, generally people are very addicted to these things. And so, generally the process is gradual. Because one of the themes of this weekend is being addicted to fruitive activities is something we try to, you know, stash inside our suitcase and carry it into the spiritual realm. Or in a little backpack and just put a little supply of fruitive purposes in our baggage. That is, we can take the notion of taking up devotional service with the idea of getting something back. I'll do some devotional service and I'll get a green card. That's a good one. Or I'll do a devotional service and I'll get some... Huh?
Get married.
Get married. Get a pious wife, a pious husband. I'll do a devotional service and I'll... whatever it is. Have a nice place to stay and some nice meals and, you know, nice people to be with. And just, you know, don't have to work so hard. I'll take up the vote. Whatever it is, whatever someone may have is, or something more subtle, I'll get fame. I'll get respect because here's a person who is, this is described by Kapila Dev to Devahuti. Those persons who take up worship of the deity with the idea that this is a good means of maintenance. And then I'll get some respect from others, from now I'm, here's a spiritually or religiously at least situated person. Yeah, I'll get a little respect after all these years of being the low guy in the totem pole. I'll get some respect. Or distinction or recognition. Mava, puja, pratishta. The fruitive mentality is very difficult to shake. But the instruction of the scripture is we should systematically abandon it. Gross and then also subtle. Everyone should at once engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. No one should worship different demigods who work as different hands of the Lord for creation, maintenance, or destruction of the material world. There are innumerable powerful demigods who look over the external management of the material world. They are all different assisting hands of Lord Vasudev. Since Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are included in the list of demigods, but Lord Vishnu or Vasudeva is always transcendentally situated, even though he accepts the quality of goodness of the material world. In case you've wondered, well, why, how would we say transcendence if he's accepts the quality of goodness in this world? Here's a nice response to that question. He is still transcendental to all the material modes. The following example will clear that matter more explicitly. That's enough. In the prison house, there are the prisoners and the managers of the prison house. Both the managers and the prisoners are bound by the laws of the king. But even though the king sometimes comes into prison, he is not bound by the laws of the prison house. The king is therefore always transcendental to the laws of the prison house. And similarly, the Lord is always transcendental to the laws of the material world. So he superintends the mode of goodness, but he's not bound by it. So, the verse again. Vasudeva paraveda, Vasudeva paramukha, Vasudeva para yoga, Vasudeva para kriyaha, Vasudeva param jnanam, Vasudeva param tapaha, Vasudeva paro dharmo, Vasudeva para gatihi. There's still some verses to go in the chapter, but this divinity and divine service wants us to, and the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam wants us to bring our attention to the personality of Godhead and the proper mode of worship with the proper understanding of who is the object of worship with great faith in that process of surrendering unto Him. It strengthens our faith to have proper knowledge of who Krishna really is. And so these verses are nurturing that knowledge, imparting that knowledge. We'll see if there's any discussion or questions on this. Or for that matter, anything that you'd like to bring up from our weekend together. Yes.
Sometimes we see in our sort of in our experience in Krishna consciousness, at least I can speak for myself, there is situations in which, you know, you understand your fruitive desires and somehow or other Krishna makes an arrangement to fulfill those fruitive desires or to facilitate those fruitive desires. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he just, you know, makes it impossible. But nevertheless, that, you know, they have to do with very strong attachments. But you know, what's that element, or how is it works in terms of Krishna fulfilling some and blocking the other ones, or how?
Devotional service works under the internal potency. And the actions of the internal potency have a whole different set of rules than the external potency. The external potency is, according to guna and karma, things happen in our lives. And when we place ourselves in the care of the internal potency, or Krishna kindly accepts us in that way, there's another set of rules, and those other set of rules are Krishna makes arrangements for us to come closer to Him. So in some cases, the fulfilling means that there's a suitable dovetail, like Dhruva Maharaj, achieving a kingdom that he was qualified to rule over because of his pure devotion, without attachment. Without undue attachment. And there's other situations where it's in the best interest of our coming closer to Krishna to not have something fulfilled or have something that we have attachment to taken from us. It's the rule of the internal potency is coming closer to Krishna. That's just the rule. So we may not understand the plan, but that's the purpose. The internal potency is to bring us closer to Krishna. And some things help us come closer to Krishna, so within Krishna's plan that's arranged for or sanctioned. And other things to bring us more to the position of simply depending upon Him and not upon the expectation of fulfillment through having that something. I mean, parents do this, so certainly God can do that. So the child could, you know, ask the same question in Sunday school class. How come sometimes my parents supply some things and sometimes they don't? Yes, Mataji?
This is transcendental. What is the meaning of transcendental?
Transcendental simply means beyond tamas, rajas, and sattva guna, nirguna, or transcendental, beyond the modes. Yeah.
When I am in certain difficulties, it could be material conditions, and I pray to Krishna and Guru that may come over this problem.
Well, supposing he didn't take you out of that trouble, then what? Then maybe it will happen. Because there's some, that's, you know, in response to Subal's question, supposing the child asks for something and the parents don't sanction that something, should they throw a tantrum until they get that something, or they should understand this is the interest of my well-being, why that thing was deprived. So then with equal gratitude. So where there's fruitive mentality, ouch, the fruitive mentality is pinched. And when we feel the pinch, do we say thank you? We'll say thank you if we're not in the mentality of fruitive purpose behind devotional service. So I'm answering your question by the response that if those things don't happen, you equally say thank you or express your gratitude to Krishna. Thank you for not allowing, just like Sudama. When he went to Dwarka, he had a purpose, a material purpose. It was inspired by his dear wife who was, it's not that she was greedy, but she was concerned about the well-being and safety of her husband. Go to Krishna, he'll something. So as he was leaving, he was thinking with gratitude, Krishna is so kind. He didn't even ask me what I had come for, because he knew what I came for and he would have fulfilled it. And had he fulfilled it, I would have just become so proud and arrogant and puffed up and thinking, now I have opulence. Krishna didn't let that happen. Krishna is so kind. My dear Krishna, and when he reached home, there was no more home. It was a palace. No more wife. It was a queen. At least dressed like a queen. And what was his thought? Krishna is so kind. So, depends on the consciousness behind the asking. And then when Krishna reciprocates this way or that way, what conscious was the consciousness that we're carrying? The next time Krishna doesn't answer your prayers, you let me know about it, how you respond. Maybe this little exchange will help you process it properly. Maybe. Yes.
You mentioned that yogis haven't realized what they were. They take birth in the next life of the rich family members.
Yeah. It's from the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita.
And you also mentioned that they have more chance of falling down because of richness and the gift contaminated agreement.
One can easily get attached to some material facility. That's the idea. It's an opportunity, but the opportunity can be misused. The opportunity is they're born in a Brahmin family, so from childhood they're learning Brahminical culture. They're born in a wealthy family. They don't have to struggle to maintain and just make ends meet, but all those necessities are provided. It's a facility. Here's $1 million. And depending upon how one uses that $1 million, it can become a good thing. Or it can become a bad thing.
But since the fact that they're not realized...
They're given the opportunity. That's the idea. So with the fact that they're not realized, any situation they're in is going to have its pluses, minuses. That's just Krishna's system. You want to second guess the system, go ahead. He's giving the facility.
My daughters are having not been fully transcendental towards, because the more purposeful to pursue opportunity rather than, in fact, the mere giving of opportunity itself is a blockage.
Okay, so Krishna's kindness upon you as you make advancement in spiritual life will be to smash you into little powder. Take away this, and that may be, Prabhupada indicate. I don't mean to, like, you know, speak something tricky or something, but when Krishna is very kind, he'll do like that. But ordinarily, that's not the program. The program is that facility is given because there's some indication, here's a person who's responsible, they can handle facility. But they may become proud of that facility, become intoxicated by the facility, become overwhelmed by the facility, and just try to become the enjoyer of that facility. That's with every situation, with every opportunity, there's also some risk. So, whatever facility, in your case, aside from the abstract, what might happen, in your case, whatever facility you have, you have a responsibility. I'm recommending that you see that it's something that's provided by Krishna so that you can utilize that something in service to Him. And whatever it is, whatever you put in the category of mine, my job, my house, my wife, my car, my bank balance, my debts, whoops. It's a responsibility to use that in proper way, in conscientious way, in Krishna service. And you have the association, you have the teaching, you have the opportunity to do that. All resources are there to exercise that facility properly. But there's certainly the other option. And the truth is, more people misuse facility. And what happens when they misuse facility? The rope gets shorter. The leash gets tighter. The security in the prison house gets stronger.
So there is kind and more kind.
Yeah. And there's special kindness. Prabhupada said Krishna exercised with him special kindness. He took everything away. And then he gave him much more than he had. But it was exclusively in service to Krishna. Suppose there's a devotee.
Who's been practicing for a long time.
Long time devotee.
But I don't see certain devotional qualifications in
him. Uh-oh, I won't repeat that one. Okay, go ahead.
And if that devotee gives me an order, and I feel that this is not in consciousness, the scriptures, nor do I appreciate it, because I don't see certain devotional qualifications in him.
You have to make a choice.
I mean,
and what choice should you make? Depends on the circumstance. I mean, there's an etiquette that says follow, unless it's something that's going to violate a principle. You may want to remove yourself from further choices, distance yourself from that association. But in as a matter of respecting etiquette, I think that's your wife trying to get your attention. I will. As a matter of etiquette, comply. There's another choice that says, this doesn't make any sense. And so it depends on the circumstance. If it's going to put you in a religiously compromised situation, particularly a spiritually compromised situation, you may choose to not do that. But at the same time, there's an etiquette principle that's at risk. So, it depends. Anything else? Yes.
Sometimes, like, if you happen to be, I cannot do proper devotional service. And then I ask for, I mean, not ask, but I pray. But my praying is, let's say, Krishna, for him. So, no, Krishna punished me, so I don't want to get punished.
Yeah, we talked about... This is exactly what we spoke about this afternoon. I suggest you listen to the recording. There's a very wonderful verse in... Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna in chapter 14 of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's quoted in the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows that verse? Tate dukham pamasu samikshamano. The verse is Lord Brahma praying not for release from the reaction, nor for the reaction. That whatever you would like to do with me, whatever is deserving, I accept. If I'm due to suffer for some mistakes or wrongdoings or some improperly, imperfectly performed devotional service, I'm fully ready to take responsibility for that. But I do have one prayer, so it's not praying, please get me out of this tough spot, and, you know, the reaction, or the other way. Please punish me. Please let my mind not budge one inch from the desire to render pure devotional service unto your lotus feet. That's the prayer that I have for you. Because I know that one who does like that becomes the inheritor of Vaikuntha. One will go to the spiritual world. So I'm imperfect, my service is imperfect, my understanding is imperfect, I'm an imperfect being. And you're the perfect being, and you have... I surrender unto you. You can do it with me whatever you like. But one thing. Please bring me to that stage of life where I'm fixed in devotion upon your lotus feet. Yes. Why do you have to make your life which again? Worse again?
No. Like, you have to cut associations you had before the
same
thing. Right? And you have a new life. Right?
Okay. Well, it's complicated. It's not one factor. But certainly, something that you have no jurisdiction over, and for that matter, Krishna doesn't claim to have jurisdiction over, and that is each individual's free will. And as Krishna doesn't interfere with the individual's free will, who are you to... You can't force another living entity to choose something. To think like that is totally foolish. What you can do is try to create an atmosphere that makes it inviting to make the right choice. Whether it's a dependent or a friend, a family member, a stranger, you know, just some person or persons of the world. No, but I'm just describing, that's something that you can do. You can make proper choices, and you can try to create an atmosphere that makes it inviting for others to make the right choice. You can't make the choices for them. And Krishna doesn't make their choices for them either. Were he to do that, there'd be no free will. Were there to be no free will, there'd be no love. For there to be love, there must be free will. And there is love, and there is free will. And Krishna, free will means Krishna does not decide for them or take it away. I'm sorry, you've misused your free will enough times. I'm going to take it away from you. Give it to me. But. That's it. No buts. No free will. Now you have to love me. And there's no even or else, because you don't even have a choice. No free will anymore for you. That doesn't happen. There's always free will. So, Krishna's assist is there. He's in the heart of that living entity, and he's inducing that living entity to come to him. Outside, not in the heart, outside, Krishna's making so many arrangements for this living entity. Now someone who is very dear to this living entity is representing Krishna and saying, do you hear the Lord of your heart speaking? Krishna's calling you. Give your love to him. Inside and outside and all around town, Krishna's making that arrangement, but he's not interfering with the free will. So there is one thing that's left for you to do, and that's to become very pure. Because one who becomes very pure becomes very dear to Krishna, and Krishna assists extra the desires and well-wishings of his pure devotee upon those who are the objects of their affection and well-wishes. That's what you can do. Are you ready?
Well, I don't have other choices because Krishna took everything from me and is bringing me only to this kind of service, so...
So become very pure.
Well, I guess that's what has to happen now.
Yeah. Dedicate yourself to that. And the saying is there, where there is spiritual well-being, material well-being follows, like a shadow follows an object, right? There's the light, there's the object, and the shadow follows the movements of the object. But Krishna's fixed. We're moving. And our spiritual well-being, when it becomes oriented properly, the material well-being is there. So maybe of necessity, it's special kindness if what you've described has happened for it to happen. Ordinarily, doesn't happen just like that. Well, it, especially those things that are impediments. Especially. Just, you'll consider, just like a child is playing. And, some children have the capacity to play nicely. And some children are really rough. And some children are especially good learners. So, is a teacher going, it's natural that a teacher will give attention according to the interest of the student to learn. If the interest of the student is very acute to learn, they'll give more attention, and which may mean frivolous things become less. And the learning process becomes greater. And if that student is attached to something that's quite detrimental to the learning process, teacher may remove that something. Not as a harsh disciplinarian, but out of special affection. And quite often, not always, that removal procedure is, after some time of purification, replaced with a much better set of circumstances.
I see that as well, and it's happening already. But
okay, then stop complaining.
What?
Stop complaining.
I know.
It's the mind is complaining. It's the mind that's complaining, and the soul is saying, thank you, Krishna. So now you know what to do. Tune into the soul. Automatically, that means this voice of the mind will just stop barking. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur described there are two recommended methods for dealing with a mind that's causing trouble. One is neglect. Just like a barking dog. A stick or neglect. It was in Potomac, Maryland, visiting the Potomac Temple, and the morning Bhagavatam class was, this had mentioned that in the purport. Then after the class, we went for a japa walk, and those of you that know Potomac, we went up and then made a left-hand turn up that road that goes up where all those super big houses and so there was myself and one other devotee, and we're going for a japa walk, and this dog as big as a horse came galloping down where the house was, showing his teeth, and I thought, okay, that was my opportunity to, and I don't see any sticks, so I'm just going to ignore him. And they said, just play cool, just keep chanting, just like he's not even there. Just kept walking, and he came right up to right where the mailbox was, and we just went as cool as a cucumber, and he looked at us, kind of shrugged his shoulders, and went back up the hill. And I thought, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. So it has to be a degree of faith, because otherwise it looked like he was trying to gobble us up or something. Real big one. So the mind can be real big sometimes. Just try to take over. Or the other is... So it's like Prabhupada said, like a wild animal. You starve the tiger, and then he becomes docile. Then you give him a little, then he accepts from the hand of the trainer. Or the other is beat into submission. So some of us have a hard time beating even the mind or anybody else. So just neglect. Starve the, don't give food to the mind. Don't invest consciousness in those thoughts. What good is that going to do anyways? Just let it go. Take shelter of what you know in your heart is kindness from Krishna. And as you see it, better circumstances to grow spiritually. And another principle is, as you become spiritually situated and pure, your well wishes, just well wishing that other person, good things will come into their life. Spiritual things will come into their life. Because Krishna will make those arrangements because of your special well-wishing upon them. It happens. It's real. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.